We are Rogue Media Sports.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
With threats to our nation waiting around every corner, adaptability is more important than ever. When conditions change without notice, quick strategic thinking is crucial. And with obstacles consistently impending, determination is essential in overcoming them. It's this willingness, decisiveness, and resilience that sets Marines apart. With our fighting spirit, we don't just fight battles, we win them. Marines are the constant our nation counts on to fight the unknown. And through adaptable problem solving, we do just that. Learn more at Marines.com.
It is the Doomsday Podcast. Matt Mosley, Ed Werder, Frito Nation Productions. And we sit here tonight. Ed, you might remember this. I know our crack producer, Chris Gross, will remember this. About 3 or 4 weeks ago, when I was just still kind of on the comeback road from the cycling accident and surgery, subsequent surgery, I did mention, I said the Cowboys were going to win four straight and make the playoffs. I think I might have been on the record. You poo-pooed that. I may have been being facetious. And yet we sit here tonight after an unlikely Cowboys runaway win as they somehow pull away from the Eagles in the second half and don't allow the Eagles to score in the second half. Ed Werder, the Cowboys now have, I would say it's gone from like 1% to 5% to like, I got to think this thing, and you usually look at those, whatever those things are called, PFI or RFI or something. I got to think it's up there around 20 or 30% at this point.
Well, I don't think your statement is going to prove correct, first of all. And the reason that I'm skeptical about your accuracy on that, as I am your accuracy about most anything, is I just don't think the Eagles can be counted upon to give the Washington football team a game if Alex Smith is a starting quarterback. I think if Alex Smith is a starting quarterback, Washington will win the game handily. And you basically, in beating the Eagles by 20 points and outscoring them 34-3 after they took a 14-3 lead, you basically took their heart, and now they have nothing to play for. Like, there's three of the four teams in the NFC East still have a chance to win the division on the final Sunday, but the one that doesn't is the Eagles, and that's the one that the Cowboys need to have be successful for them to be able to win their game against the Giants and then win the East and qualify for the playoffs. And I just think that's highly improbable that that's going to happen. I well believe the Cowboys can beat the Giants. I just don't see why. I don't see the Eagles playing hard. They're not a very talented team to begin with. They have the sixth pick in the draft right now. The organization is not going to want to throw that away the last week of the season. And you saw how bad they are on defense when, you know, they're without three defensive linemen. They can't rush the passer, which the pass rush they count on to cover up all the flaws in their secondary, which we saw Andy Dalton exploit. I just don't think the Eagles are going to give the Cowboys the result that they need in Washington.
I hear what you're saying, but it's also highly improbable it even got to this point, and now it almost seems like some sort of fate thing has taken over. And I will say, now I don't know how compromised Alex Smith will be. Maybe in a sense they were saving him for almost like a game seven. Hey, if we need him, if we need our best pitcher kind of thing. I don't know, but if Haskins or what's the young man who's behind him? Hankey. If Hankey or Haskins goes, I do think the Eagles have a good chance. Now, they got Alex Smith close to playing today, according to all reports. Ed, you always have a good feel for that, and it sounds like your gut's telling you that Alex Smith we'll give it a go next week.
Well, it's all about functionability, and I think he was pretty close in that regard today. He was able to practice most of the week, and I have almost no doubt that he'll be the starting quarterback next week, given the progress that he made during the week, how close he was to being able to play in this game, and then, you know, the stakes, what's at stake next Sunday for Washington against Philadelphia. And if, you know, Terry McLaurin didn't play today either, so I would think he'd be in that same situation. And I think between the two of them, they'll be able to take advantage of this Eagles secondary as well.
All right. All right. It is the Doomsday Podcast, and the Cowboys have somehow messed around, and we'll have a meaningful football game, and we'll see how it all lines up and what happens. But today was kind of interesting because we could watch a couple of games at once and all that. We'll talk about it. Chris Gross, play the music, sir. All right, Ed Werder, Matt Mosley, Frito Nation Productions, and hope everybody had a Merry Christmas, Happy Holidays, all of that to you. Ed, you look, I can see you right now. You got some athleisure wear. Did you, was Santa good to you? Is there anything you received this year that you were kind of excited about?
Well, we were able to escape to Colorado for Christmas. So It was our granddaughter Delilah's first Christmas. She's 7 months old. And then Henry's at that magical Christmas age of five. And he got from us his first football helmet and uniform. And it was an odd choice of teams. He lives in Colorado. He was born here. So he does follow the Broncos and the Cowboys a little bit, or he's aware of them more than others. But he wanted a Panthers uniform because he's into the Avengers, and one of the characters in the Avengers is a Black Panther. So he wanted a Black Panthers uniform, and so he's wearing a Christian McCaffrey jersey. And I think he's a wonderful representative of football, and the McCaffrey family's from Colorado, and Ed McCaffrey okay. won Super Bowls with the Broncos. But so that was our Christmas. And then I hustled back because I was assigned for the first time since the Pittsburgh game to cover the Cowboys today. So I found myself back in the most unexpected of workday locations, which was game day at Jerry World. Mm-hmm. Like you said, we're playing meaningful football. Like, didn't we all believe that we were done on this podcast talking about the games? Like, the games were of no real consequence for a very long period of time.
Yes.
And here we are. Now they're not. Now the game is the most important thing again. And that's really great. And I think you got to give, you know, a lot of credit to Andy Dalton. You know, the Cowboys have started four different quarterbacks this season, and only one of them doesn't have a losing record. And it's Andy Dalton. The Cowboys invested, in a veteran quarterback during the offseason, even though Dak Prescott had never missed a start. And Dalton's proven the value of that decision. He's won half of his eight starts and rallied the Cowboys to victory when Prescott suffered a season-ending injury week five against the Giants. So credit to the Cowboys front office and to Andy Dalton for doing what was expected of him. And I think the other interesting development here with the Cowboys is, on the day their defense broke the franchise record for most points and touchdowns allowed in a single season, they also forced three more turnovers. And in the three-game winning streak, the Cowboys now plus +9 in turnover margin during those three games.
Yeah, and Ed, the Mike McCarthy, who, again, at the end of this thing, we got to look at the whole season, and he's still going to have his shaky moments. I had stepped away from this season as well and spent up to many, many hours writing some columns about this season. And now, Ed, I don't know. Some of that might go for naught. But the news came across Fox. Ed, I don't know how this slipped past you, that late last night or whenever they have their meeting, the watermelons came back out. They were smashing watermelons. I guess they've had so few wins this year, it's like, well, we won that game against the Vikings when we smashed some watermelons. Let's smash some more watermelons. And the team captains apparently smashed watermelons that were filled with candy. And this team strikes me as a team that, like, they choose motivational tactics from, like, first grade birthday parties. Like, this is something you would do for Henry. like, you know, here in a couple of years. Try to hit a watermelon full of candy.
I think Henry's too old for that at five.
Too mature.
I think he's beyond that at this point. But it appeals apparently to the Cowboys because they're 2-0 when Mike McCarthy gets out his sledgehammer. I believe the first time he did it was against the Vikings, and they won on the road there impressively. And now they've dispatched the Eagles with relative ease as well. But, you know, as we look at this, so the Eagles, as I said, are the one team now eliminated from the NFC East. And didn't we think, first of all, that continues the pattern, right? The NFC East has had a different champion every year since 2004 when the Eagles won three in a row. This is the 16th straight year that the team that won the division one year did not win it the next year, with the Eagles being eliminated today by the Cowboys. And the other interesting thing is just how bad the NFC East is. There is not going to be a division winner in this NFC East with a 500 or better record. The last time any team in the NFC East was even at 500 was week two, when both Dallas and Washington were 1-1. Dallas is the only team in the division all season that had a winning record at any point. They were 1-0 after week one. So somebody from this division next week is going to be the third team in the Super Bowl era to go to the playoffs as a division champion with a losing record. The 2014 Panthers did it at 7-8-1. The 2010 Seahawks did it at 7-9. And in all likelihood, either Washington or Dallas will do it at 7-9 this year as well.
Well, and, you know, earlier you stated that you think it's highly improbable, but if it happened, who would be the hottest team heading into the postseason of those four? It would be the Dallas Cowboys. And, Ed, dare I say that, I mean, like, if they finish out with a win and if they somehow host a playoff game, could the, you know, one of the just things that we had thought of that was going to happen for sure was that Mike Nolan was going to be fired and they would have some new members of the defensive staff. Is this guy, and you've known and dealt with Nolan for many, many years and know about him, and he had some time there in Denver. That's an organization you've known really well. Is there a chance this guy's on his way to saving his job, or is that still improbable?
I'd still say that that's unlikely for the reasons I cited earlier. I mean, they've given up the most points in franchise history, the most touchdowns in franchise history. Obviously, they played better football recently, and maybe that, if Mike McCarthy is so inclined, gives him an argument to bring Mike Nolan and the defensive staff back. I just think that Jerry and Steven are going to be pretty resistant to that idea based on how poorly they played on defense for almost the duration of the season, beginning to end. And of course, they've taken some responsibility for that too, because of the pandemic eliminating the preseason and training camp as we know it. They said it was too much to, you know, try and implement a new defensive system under the circumstances through Zoom calls and so forth and not being on the field. And so they've taken some responsibility for that. But I think ultimately the culpability is going to belong to Mike Nolan. And, you know, he hadn't called plays on defense for 8 years. I think that in all likelihood, there'll be a change at that position. Unless the Cowboys go to the playoffs and have some level of success, I think that's the only thing that would give Mike McCarthy the leverage to keep Mike Nolan and the defensive coaches, if that's what he wanted to do to begin with.
All right. It is Doomsday Podcast. Ed Warder, Matt Mosley, Frito Nation Productions. Cowboys find a way to win this thing. And I like that, Ed, there were some complaints on Twitter that you're a man. By the way, have you welcomed me back to Twitter? Have you given me, I think you did that perhaps on Twitter. You have on the podcast. I want to give you that opportunity right now. To me, it's a pretty big thing in the Twitter world to have my suspension or whatever it's called lifted, or the hack that happened. The problem is, you know, I have that burner account now that at Mosley was hacked. I don't know how to get rid of that. I'm just going to keep that one just in case.
Yeah, I'll welcome you back, but only
thank you.
I missed your witty repartee on there, but mostly I'm going to welcome you back strictly because I feel somewhat responsible for you losing your account there for a while because it was apparently I got hacked and that led to you getting hacked. And
yeah,
so yeah, I'll welcome you back on in that regard.
Someone named Brittany from Twitter, she was the one who made it happen and got me back on Twitter, and I appreciate her. I've tried to express my gratitude via email, and she has not responded. I think she just wants to kind of move on with her life, and I understand that. Ed, the so here we sit. Cowboys have put themselves in this position. Let's look at a little bit at today's game. We'll have our stretch marks, our grades from Stretch, and I think for once he'll be in a pretty happy mood about this team. Ed, let's start. We talked about Andy Dalton a little bit. You got to say, for being such a broken down, a whole group of replacements on the offensive line, man, they've kind of developed a little bit of continuity, and I think we probably need to give the O-line coach a little credit for that, because we, you know, they obviously, and I think that we have to give that O-line credit for some of Dalton's recent success.
Yeah, I mean, I think they have established some continuity, even though they're primarily backup players. And even Connor Williams, the last holdover starter, left this game early with a knee injury, went to the locker room in the third quarter. But, you know, in fairness to the Eagles, we also have to point out that they were without Josh Sweat and Derek Barnett. They're two starting defensive ends. And then after a series or two, you know, all-world defensive tackle Fletcher Cox was out of the game with a neck injury. Then on the back end, they don't have Avante Maddox, one of their starting corners. They don't have McLeod, one of their safe starting safeties. So they were shorthanded, but hey, that's the way it is. You know, we haven't let the Cowboys use that as an alibi when they've lost, so we're not going to let the Eagles do it either. But I thought they were unable to pressure Andy Dalton very consistently, and so he was able to. He's good enough to take advantage of the one real remaining strength of this team, and that's the wide receiver group, right? He threw for 377 yards and three touchdowns. He had three 50-yard passing plays, each to a different receiver. Michael Gallup and Amari Cooper had 100 yards receiving, and CeeDee Lamb scored twice. Ezekiel Elliott, I thought, was strong in closing out the game and finished with his second 100-yard rushing game under Mike McCarthy as a head coach. So, and then you talk about, I'm sure we'll talk more about this. We've already talked about them moving on from Mike Nolan. Well, they might also lose their offensive coordinator. And Kellen Moore is so good at the job that they had 500 yards of total offense for the fourth time this season. That's a franchise record. They've never done that in the 60-year history of the organization. So that's how valuable Kellen Moore is, that he's able to achieve that. With, I think Dak Prescott had three of the games, but obviously Andy Dalton had the other one today.
I mean, what I feel like you're getting at is this could end up being one of the great 7-9 football teams of all time.
Well, I think it's no small accomplishment to overcome the adversity they have. I mean, you lost Dak Prescott, who, as we said, had never missed a game before. Ezekiel Elliott's having the worst season of his career by almost every measure. And you've got a defense that came into the game today, ranked last in the NFL against the run, had given up the most touchdown passes, 31, and has now become the defense to give up the most touchdowns and the most points in a single season in 60 years. So I think they've overcome a lot. And I guess credit to Mike McCarthy in his first year for kind of hanging in there and, you know, continuing to push these players and get them to the point where they could put together three pretty good performances in succession when it seemed all but over for them.
Yeah.
And maybe it's going to prove to be a bad thing. I think obviously my scenario that I laid out is going to be a bad thing because I have them missing the playoffs and falling from the fourth pick in the draft to, I think are they 11 right now? I think they're 11th right now, and so if they win again next week and don't get to the playoffs, they're going to fall even further, and you'll have not benefited from this season in the way that you could have.
The best draft. The best pick you could have at that point, Ed, might be like 19 or something if you make the playoffs. And
but they might not make the playoffs and pick 15 or 16, which would be even worse. Like if you're gonna pick that low, you might as well be the team that makes the playoffs and gives yourself a chance and feels like you've accomplished something going into the offseason.
Yeah, this team has not mastered the art of the tank, and they've continued to make strides. You talked about that receiving core. Michael Gallup, a man who sometimes gets lost. Amari Cooper has all the money. And CeeDee Lamb, because of him being an all-world rookie and a great college player, gets a lot of attention. It was Gallup's day. Gallup had an enormous day. And Ed, that watching him tiptoe down that sideline and then watching him around the goal line. I mean, Amari had the drop. That was surprising on a great throw from Andy Dalton. But I mean, you talked about, you know, that is something you can build around moving forward. And today, at least, Gallup reminded us, you know, from a big play standpoint, he's right. He may be the best of the bunch.
Well, yeah, Gallup's obviously a terrific player, and it'll be interesting to see what happens with him as he gets to the point where the Cowboys can redo his contract. And if there's at some point in the not too distant future, they have to decide between Amari Cooper and Michael Gallup, which direction they go. But I mean, we talked about the Eagles being without Avante Maddox at corner. Well, they played an undrafted rookie named Michael Jacquet, and Michael Gallup crushed him in the first half. 9 routes, 7 targets, 5 catches, 116 yards, 2 touchdowns. And Jacquet was also victimized by Amari Cooper on his 62-yard catch, where he caught the ball near the line of scrimmage and was chased down the sideline and out of bounds inside the 10. And that's the other thing. I think if you're troubled by anything with the Cowboys today, it was they didn't really execute their offense very well in the red zone. You mentioned the Amari Cooper drop. That was on a well-thrown ball over the shoulder in the end zone. They also, you know, had a series where they tried Zeke twice early on in a sequence inside the 5, and then on third down, Dalton kind of rolled out and tried to run for it, couldn't make it. His receiver was obviously covered. But they're really not a great red zone scoring team. I think they're 26th in the NFL at like 53%, which is still a disconcerting figure, I think, for them.
The one thing I would bring up before we get to Glenn Stretch Smith, you and I have seen over the years Jerry Jones sort of say some things after a season that makes you think, okay, he didn't get this. He missed out, or he's providing some excuses. And although he's already admitted, hey, I whiffed on the defense and changing the scheme at all. Ed, the one thing I would worry about if I were a Cowboys fan is what if this late season surge changes some thoughts about this team. Now, I'm not saying forget the offensive line, because some of those guys will be coming back. I'm saying some of the defensive line, like, hey, we like some of these young guys. You know, we could build around whoever, Antoine Woods, whoever, 78, who was running around out there today. What I'm saying is, if I, you know, you were talking about the draft spot, and I get all that, but Jerry has a way of always finding the glass half full. And if I were a Cowboys fan, I would be a little worried about their takeaways from what's happening right now. Like, this coaching staff and these players turned it around and overcame all this adversity. So I guess my worry would be that they might not attack the offseason the same as if they had gone with your plan and finished 4-12, or even with 3 wins or something like that.
Well, Jerry Jones is always unpredictable, right? It's hard to know what he's going to do, but we usually have insight into his thought process on a weekly basis during a season, because we talk to him after virtually every game, comes out of the locker room, we're all waiting for him, he spends about a half hour talking to us, and we get a real sense of what his feelings are on a lot of different issues, and we haven't had that opportunity even one time. Forget talking to him face-to-face, just even in a Zoom call or on a phone. I don't know that anybody's talked to Jerry all year long other than the host of his official radio show. And so I think we go into this offseason more blind than usual about how he views what's happened and what the issues are that are most important for them to resolve. I would like to think that it's fairly obvious, as you mentioned, if you're able to keep Dak Prescott, that you have one of the better quarterbacks in football, your offensive line should come back and you should have at least, three really good players up front to start. And you should benefit from some of these guys who are playing now in roles that you didn't expect. I think you're pretty good at running back and you're better at tight end than you ever imagined. So I would think that you have to take a hard look at, well, where are we the weakest? Like, if we have to, we want to be Green Bay. We want to be New Orleans. We want to be the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. We want to be Seattle. Where are we weakest? Well, I would argue it's pretty obvious that defense is what needs their attention the most. And I think there have been, now they said last year, hey, we're gonna draft defense, and then they took CeeDee Lamb. It's hard to argue with that, really, quite honestly. I get that they could have had a defensive player there, but it would have been Lavon Chaisson, and he hasn't done much in Jacksonville. They're gonna pick first overall. Not that we think a pass rusher can turn an entire franchise around, but so I think they were justified in the CeeDee Lamb pick, and I think they will dedicate themselves to improving on defense. The question is, how can you do that if the cap goes down,
correct,
and the price of your quarterback goes up?
And running back, wide receiver, quarterback, those three take up an enormous portion of the cap.
Yeah, but they're committed to the other guys. They're not committed to the quarterback situation.
No.
We assume every indication and everything they've said is that they want Dak Prescott to be their quarterback, and they're going to make a deal to ensure that. But Dak gets a voice in that too, and he hasn't wavered at all. And it'll be interesting to see how he views that, given he's finally missed games with an injury. So maybe he feels more vulnerable than ever before, and certainly in a way that he had never experienced in the NFL. But defensively, I think they do need help, and I think you have to give them credit. Like I said, the Eagles scored 14 points on their first 12 offensive snaps, and then the Cowboys outscored them 34-3, and they were able to force turnovers from Jalen Hurts on their Eagles' last three possessions to close out the game. Randy Gregory, who began the season on the suspended list, had three forced fumbles against the Eagles. The rookie corner, their second round pick, Trayvon Diggs, intercepted Jalen Hurts. He has three interceptions this year, all against the Eagles. So I think they have some players. I think Gregory's been a better player than I gave him credit for, quite honestly. I really thought the Cowboys were foolish not to move on from him and that they were crazy to depend on him. But man, he looks like a fantastic young player right now if he can sustain it and build on it.
Yeah. Yeah. And you saw his speed, you saw some of the pass rush moves, the inside moves, and I thought you saw it. I think, Ed, I'm gonna make a interesting prediction. What a negotiating ploy for the Cowboys to just make things a little interesting and make even Dak go, interesting. They might make an offer to Dalton on like a 3-year extension. Not saying he's going to be the starter. I'm saying a reasonable deal with Andy Dalton, to get him as the backup for a little while. Instead of next year going to, unless like maybe they fall in love, maybe Garrett Gilbert in that one game looked good enough where they try to do something with him. But back to your point where we basically started this podcast, they lately have fallen in love with Andy Dalton. That doesn't mean he's going to be the quarterback of the future. I just think if they could, they'd keep him around for a little while.
Sure. And I mean, it was interesting to me that they began this game today with Dak still being the team's leading passer despite the week 5 injury, and that Dalton during the course of this game made up the 300-yard difference and finally emerged as a Dallas passing leader with his first 300-yard passing game in more than a year. He had 396 yards at Miami last year in a December game for the Bengals, but It'll be interesting if this team gets to the playoffs, because Andy Dalton's going to have to get them there. And Andy Dalton has never won a playoff game. He's played in four. He hasn't won any of them. So there you go. Looking forward to how this Cowboys season may play out.
Really? Oh, I had him 0-6. Okay. Oh, he's 0-4. Interesting. So, and how? What's the combined playoff games that Dak and Tony Romo have won?
Would that be three?
I guess so.
Tony was 2-4, and Dak is 1-2, I believe, right?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. He's got the one. So again, all Andy has to do is get one. It is the Doomsday Podcast. It is time for our grading. The harshest grader in the NFL, former Cowboys coach and scout, Glenn Stretch Smith. You know him. He's been very harsh this season. But as the Cowboys suddenly find themselves with six wins, we never thought something like this might happen. Stretch, your overall take on a team that was left for dead. I have written basically a whole lot about the sort of end of year project, and now it may go, all that may go for naught. How shocked are you that the Cowboys sit here with a realistic opportunity to win this division?
All right. It's shocking. I mean, if you would have told me a month ago we would be in this position, I would have told you there's no way. And quite frankly, going into today's game, minus Antoine Woods and Vander Esch, I really thought they'd have to score 31 to win the football game. I didn't have any idea what Philadelphia would be like. I just knew that they would want to come into the football game and run a bunch of zone read looks, which is exactly what they did early. And gave Dallas all kinds of problems. But, you know, you got to give credit is that the defense did hang in there. They made a few adjustments. And the offense came out and, you know, went up and down the field against a depleted Philadelphia secondary. So, I mean, you got to give these guys credit. And, quite frankly, I'm going to have to give Mike Nolan some credit here. And saying that, I just saw some things in this game that – they haven't done this year, and they still did some of their proverbial, Jordan Lewis, let me run through this guy and give him a 40-yard PI here. But they did some things that were really, really good and were sound in what they're doing. So I did not think we'd be here. I did not think it would take 15 weeks to do some of the things that I've seen them do defensively, but – you know what? They're in the middle of this NFC East race, and all of a sudden, you know, that they are a very formidable offense, and they're going to give people some problems.
Well, it is shocking. I still can't even. And who knows? I mean, there's still some stuff that has to happen. They have to win. The Washington football team has to lose again. They had no problem doing that today to a Matt Rhule-led Panthers team. Stretch, let's start walking through this a little bit. The defensive line, led by Randy Gregory, we've trained ourselves to not depend on him much because, of course, at one point he had missed like 32 of 34 games. Yet, man, just making plays, chasing people down. I mean, this is an athletic Eagles quarterback. I mean, obviously, first half, he looked great. And I would say Randy Gregory changed the complexion of this game.
What I'm going to say, Matt, is Randy Gregory showed you every reason that the Cowboys have done everything to try to get him back on track. I mean, I saw him put his foot in the ground today and go chase an outside zone read that there's nobody else on this football team that can do. And quite frankly, there may not be a handful of guys in the NFL that can do that. And you see him get up the field. You see him dip and rip his shoulder. I mean, yeah, I get it. They put up with however many years they put up with him rolling his own in strawberry zigzags. But right now you can see why they put up with that.
Yeah, the zigzags got him for a little bit. Obviously, he has some issues there, but seems like his mental health and everything is back on track. And so, man, to see that kind of ability. Let's look at Stretch, if you would, the linebackers. I thought, especially around the goal line that one time, and then also there were some other times. Sean Lee, of course, in the nickel, sometimes is over on the sideline, but in the base defense. We saw shades of the old Sean Lee, where he'd come in and sideline to sideline, made some good hits. What'd you think of the linebacker play? I know 54, Jalen Smith got in there and got a little pressure today.
Yeah, and he played well, but I like the points you make. I mean, Sean Lee is still a very smart football player, and in between the tackles, you're not going to run, you know, a certain motion or a certain shift or a certain look that, quite frankly, he hasn't seen. And so you saw him down there on the goal line, I mean, stick it up in there and play his gap. And that's what he is. He's a very smart football player. Unfortunately, I mean, he's just, with age, he doesn't have the speed to be able to carry it sideline to sideline like he used to. But, I mean, Sean Lee in this linebacking core, I thought, did a really nice job of what they were wanting to do, which was blitz at times and then be able to spy on the quarterback at times and not give him the ability to really cut loose and extend plays. Now, you know, you're not going to bat 1,000 in that situation, but I thought overall the game plan really fit the linebackers well, and they played well in this football game.
Okay, and then, 48 was out there running around doing some things at one point. The secondary, walk me through what happened on the double move where DeSean Jackson got loose. I mean, honestly, it looked like the Eagles were just going to shred the Cowboys. It's 14-3. Cowboys go out there, do a 3-and-out, and it looked really bad at the time. You got cartwheels in the end zone and all of that stuff happening. Walk me through that particular play and then what you saw from the overall secondary, Awuzier, Diggs back out there involved in this thing, Jordan Lewis and some of the others.
Yeah, Awuzier got beat on a 7 pump, which that's a high angle corner, and then he break it to the post. Well, not only did he get beat, but I think it was Wilson or Thompson. I don't know who it was supposed to be. It was a cover 3 look, but he's got to close the deep middle for you. Well, when he saw Jackson look as if he were going to break high to the corner, he opened his hips and went the other way, and then the 7 pump came right behind it, and it really made Awuzier look bad, and he did look bad. I mean, he kind of stumbled around like he'd had him a good stiff drink right there, trying to open his hips up to get back in there, and you know, quite frankly, you know, Awuzier is on the ground too much for me. I mean, I don't like that. And he made a play, he made a tackle later in the game. It kind of makes you think, well, okay, you know, you see what some of the coaches see and what he can do. But quite frankly, that's a bust in the secondary. The safety has got to close the middle, because once he ran that stem, that 7, that high angle corner, then he shaved the Awuzier's hip and went skinny back up in there, and it was wide open. It was a great design play and well put together. I thought, you know, I didn't like the PI by Jordan Lewis. I thought that was really dumb. I mean, you got to be smarter than to go run through some guy's hands on a 40-yard PI. I did see Brown actually set the edge on the defense one time. I hollered so loud at my TV that even my son came running out of the back trying to figure out what the hell was going on. But at least he came up and set the edge, and that's what I'm talking about. Doing a few things, kind of wrong arming that and getting up in there where he was able to turn that play back inside. And it was about a 3-yard gain where it could have been a 9-yard gain. So secondary wise, I think Wilson's a good player. Jordan Lewis is just limited. Brown is very limited. But as a unit today, they actually did some okay things. And when I say okay things, they played the responsibility they were supposed to play and the coverage they were supposed to play it in. And you know what? When that happens, you got to give them a little credit, and you got to give Mike Nolan a little credit. And certainly I've been on those guys all year about what a poor job they've done. Let's stretch, give them a little knick-knack, paddywhack, give a dog a bone. I'll give them a little bone.
Okay. They got the bone for the defense in Mike Nolan. And I tell you, the whole unit, I shocking. You talked about shocking the Cowboys are in this position. Shocking that it was 20-17 at the half. You would have thought that this thing was going to go back and forth from that point on. And for them to get stuck on 17, that was shocking. With the amount of yards they were putting up, and it's proficient. I mean, that guy throws a nice ball, Stretch. I mean, I don't know if they you know, it seemed like the Peterson was in a nice rhythm calling plays in the first half. And once the Cowboys stung them to go up 27-17, it's just kind of like they never really could get much going again. Now, yeah. Stretch, let's go over to the offense. Let's start with the quarterback. How about the redhead? We everybody said, oh, he only averages this. Oh, he said, hey, about almost threw for a Dak like 400 yards today. And you know, sometimes if a guy gets loose in coverage up the seam, like CD did that one time, or Amari, I mean, you know, it looks easy, but you got to put it out there. And I would say that, boy, managing this team, he was more than a caretaker, quarterback today.
Yeah, and he made the right checks a lot of times. I mean, he's a smart guy. He brought the tight ends. He brought Bell in a couple times. He brought CDM to block the backside. I mean, you can tell he understands what Kellen Moore is doing from a run game perspective. And then he also was able to check to that wide receiver screen out there and stick it on Gallup. When he saw him in a blitz look, he wanted the ball now and threw it out there and got it to him. So he does a great job of understanding, I think, what Kellen Moore wants to do and what Kellen Moore is trying to do, which from a numbers perspective is get the run numbered up, knowing that he's not great. He's not going to road grade him with this offensive line. But if he can get him numbered up, get a hat on a hat, then you can see some of the things that Zeke can do, you know, up in there, and they were able to do that late. I thought that Andy Dalton, I hated the ball he threw and the timing of him throwing it when they were up 13 right there, and he threw the interception. But overall, I mean, I would definitely give him a B-plus for how he played and how he got his team and his offense in the right situations.
Yeah, we talked about, you know, was he one of the better backups in the NFL? And I would say right now he's playing – like that. And I don't know, I'm not going to get on some bandwagon for why don't you make him the franchise quarterback, but as a backup, very, very efficient. Now, how about, I thought, you know, we've been a little hard on a guy. I mean, this running back has been, Pollard's been talked up a whole bunch with Zeke. You know, it's just not been a care, you know, his kind of year, but Stretch, I did think, boy, whether it was catching the ball or running, the fury that he ran with today and some of that yards, that did remind you a little bit of the old Zeke, didn't it?
Well, yeah, and I haven't been hard on him. I've been trying to explain that it's very hard to run in certain situations. And yeah, there were a lot of guys that got excited about Pollard. Pollard is not a back that's going to carry it 20 times a game. And I think I said that on the podcast before. And I know that, Zeke is a workhorse. Zeke is a hell of a football player, and he had a week off, so you could tell he had fresh legs. He was out there finishing runs, and I can tell you right now that the Giants coaching staff is not looking forward to seeing this guy and hammering on him because of what he can do. What I really am more impressed with, fellas, is the tight ends. I mean, these tight ends – are really doing a hell of a job. And I'm saying they are blocking at the line of scrimmage. They're moving in the backfield and being able to run some leads and being able to do – they're catching the football. I mean, the tight ends are really impressive. And they're – to me, they're really the difference in what's going on with Zeke and how they're able to run the football, because we know they're limited offensive line-wise. I mean, these are – don't kid yourself. These are not – this is not Tyron Smith, Zach Martin. I mean, you know, Lyle Collins. You got to remember, these are the second-tier guys, they're doing a hell of a job too. So I'm going to give a lot of credit right now to the tight ends and the job that they're doing blocking the edge and how they're running their routes and what they're doing with their motions and their shifts.
Yeah, and now the offensive line, Connor Williams got banged up for a little bit today, came back out there. There's a little continuity with this offensive line, and while they're not great, like you said, they seem to be getting the job done, and Dalton is having enough time to make some plays downfield. This receiving core, finally, it seems like we're seeing what people were talking about. CeeDee Lamb, Amari Cooper, and then obviously Gallup. Stretch, I mean, you could make the argument that of the three-headed monster the Cowboys have, that Gallup at times looks like the most dangerous wide receiver, and he showed it again today in a multi-touchdown game, which was the first of his career.
Yeah, he's a heck of a football player. I mean, obviously, we know Cooper's a heck of a football player, and he was, you know, he was angry at himself for dropping that fade down there that he should have caught. I mean, that's one of the best balls Andy Dalton threw all day, was the drop in the end zone. But you see CD, he can move, he can motion. I mean, you can run the football to him on some of those jet sweeps and some of those things like that he scored right there at the end of the game on. So, I mean, they really have got it going on offensively. And it helps, again, that you've got a quarterback who can get the ball out of his hand, he can make a quick decision, and then, you know, an offensive line who is starting to work together for more than, you know, 1 or 2 or 3 weeks. And they're, you know, they're not, again, they're not going to road grade you or hammer you off the ball, but boy, it looks like they're doing a pretty good job of getting a hat on a hat. And then they're going to get beat some around the edge. You saw Dalton take the sack late. I mean, that's going to happen some, but boy, I mean, if you would have told me that you were going to go play this way offensively for, I don't know, I mean, this team's played pretty decent for a few weeks offensively.
Yeah.
With this offensive line, I'd have said no. But I'm going to tell you this, too, to end this thing here, Mosley, you got to give a lot of credit to Kellen Moore. I mean, I think he's doing a hell of a job with calling the plays, what he's doing, how he's motioning and shifting guys and getting his players in a great position.
Yep, and we'll see. He may be headed to Boise State. We'll see Jerry. We'll see if Jerry can maybe win a negotiation. I did think of you. Last thing I got for you, Stretch. Mike McCarthy said after the game, I don't know if you saw my tweet, he was talking about scoring at the end of the half and then at the first of the third quarter, and he said, that's a Whataburger double with cheese. I thought, man, it's been a weird year for him, but that's one way to win you over is to bring up the Whataburger with cheese.
Let me tell you something.
A double.
That right there will get him the password to the Honeycomb Hideout every time if you start talking about a Whataburger. And if you really understand the green chili hatch or the spicy bacon burger, I mean, if you've got that, the hell you laughing at, Chris? If you got that taste down, you're going to get the password.
Producer Chris Gross liking some of that. A man who does not, I think, favor the Hatch chilies, does not think they have the taste, but I think Stretch loves getting a Hatch chili on there. Stretch, you know what people want right now?
They want to chase it down with a Miller Lite, Matt Mosley.
Oh,
that's what they want.
Goodness. You said it. You said it, and it's the original light beer. Miller Lite always been there to bring people together through Miller time, especially the holidays. Boy, I tell you, Stretch is a man who, he's been known to put down a Miller Lite. So cheers to the only beer of the Cowboys celebrating 60 years of greatness. Here's to the original light beer. It's Miller time, even social distancing. People gathered around their Christmas trees, and the beer was flowing. And, of course, it was the beer of choice. It was Miller Lite. Holiday season, Miller Lite celebrated a unique occasion with the Dallas Cowboys. I want to remind you of those sweaters, hats, and socks. From the Thanksgiving Day game, that's the title sponsor, the iconic Thanksgiving Day game. That's, of course, Miller Lite. Those things are still floating around, Stretch. I'll secure you some of those. Love to see you in some of that knitwear. Celebrate responsibly. Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I think I could moonwalk in a pair of those. So go ahead and get me a pair when you got time.
I tell you, have you ever had a case? Have you ever been able to take down a case of Miller Lites?
All right. I'd give it to college try. Hey, the Cowboys win next week and the Redskins lose. We'll give it the old college try, Mosley. How's that?
Miller Brewing Company, Milwaukee, Wisconsin. 96, yeah, as I'm saying, celebrate responsibly. 96 calories and 3.2 carbs per 12 ounces. It's Miller Lite, the official beer of the Dallas Cowboys. And that is Glenn Stretch Smith, former Cowboys scout and coach, also a member of the WFAA TV team. And you can watch him Sunday nights at 10:30 on Dell Hansen's sports special, making Dell look good every Sunday night during the football season. Good night, Stretch.
Have a good one, fellas.
Oh, I knew it. I knew Stretch. And Ed, I knew you'd appreciate that. Would love to react to that comment from Mike McCarthy, who really ingratiated himself to Cowboys fans and the people of the great state of Texas and across the Southwest with his comment about the touchdowns at the end of the first half and the first and third quarter. He said that was a Whataburger double with cheese, he called it, and said those would be wrappers all over the facility on Tuesday. Whataburger with cheese all around. Ed, as a guy who spent a lot of your life out in Colorado, going to college out there, growing up, spending part of your childhood in that direction, when did you have your first Whataburger? And have you ever had a double with cheese?
I've never had the double with cheese, and I can remember my first In-N-Out burger better than I can remember my first Whataburger, as sacrilegious as that might be here in the great state of Texas. But I did, when I first saw that remark, I saw it on your Twitter feed, and I wondered if you had just made that up. But then, because it was funny, and it seemed like it's in line with what you do on Twitter. But then I saw him quoted elsewhere similarly, yeah. And I thought it was hysterical that Mike McCarthy would bring that up. So well done by him. Always looking for a new sponsorship deal.
That's right. And for all we know, I'm trying to think who the fast food sponsor is for the Cowboys. I mean, you'd think it'd have to be Whataburger. We used to accuse Randy Galloway of being the voice of that. You remember that old man's voice? He'd say, Whataburger. Yeah. We used to say that was Randy actually doing that. Ed, one of the things McCarthy also talked about was he was asked about Kellen Moore. And the fact that Kellen Moore, word came out that Kellen Moore had interviewed with Boise State. And, of course, he played there and famously had some great trick plays there in some of their great wins. They were a team that crashed the old BCS party a few times over the years. But Kellen Moore is beloved, and in fact, maybe the most beloved Boise State quarterback of all time, and certainly he'll have the inside track if he wanted it. Ed, what have you gathered as you've kind of looked into this? And then even, I'll say this, I listened to McCarthy, and he almost kind of seemed embarrassed that he might have said too much. I think he sort of wanted to say, hey, this is unique, and I would understand it if he took that job. But he also went to great lengths to say, I think this guy's great, and we'd love to keep him around. Now, what I wonder is, I'm reading between the lines here, is there any part of Mike McCarthy that kind of thinks, well, at least I could go back to calling plays if this kid gets out of here?
I doubt he would admit to that. And I'll say this, before the game started on this subject, my thought was Jerry needs to be able to convince Mike McCarthy to take the Boise State job so that he can keep Kellen Moore. but I don't, I was just being facetious about that. But yeah, I mean, Kellen Moore is arguably the greatest player in Boise State history. He went 50-3 as a quarterback, finished number 4 in the Heisman voting in 2010. And he's not under contract to the Cowboys beyond the season. And I got the sense in interacting with some people before the game on this subject that, you know, Kellen really wanted to devote his attention to this game and trying to win this game, and that he did not officially interview for the Boise State job. But if he wants it, I assume he's going to get it. I can't imagine they wouldn't offer it to him if he wanted to be the next coach. And To me, it comes down to how much does Jerry view this situation to be similar to Sean Payton leaving the Cowboys organization for a head coaching position, in that, you know, the Cowboys can't endure another brain drain on the coaching department. The mere fact that Moore, you know, not only remained on the Cowboys staff, but was empowered to call plays either by or for Mike McCarthy is just a clear demonstration of his importance to the organization. But I don't know that there's an obvious solution for Jerry, because just as the timing was never right for him to make Sean Payton the head coach because of Bill Parcells, you know, you kind of have a similar situation now with Kellen Moore. I mean, McCarthy's a Super Bowl winning coach and he's got 4 years remaining on his contract. I guess maybe the positive for the Cowboys would be, and this is different than the Sean Payton situation, the positive for the Cowboys might be that Moore would be presumably leaving for a college head coaching job. So maybe Jerry believes the Cowboys could convince him to return whenever that's most feasible for them. But I mean, yeah, we talked a minute ago about the 500-yard, you know, offensive performances, having four of them this year for the first time in franchise history. You know, when Dak Prescott was injured, he had the four highest single game passing totals in the NFL at the time. And then last year, Kellen Moore, you know, 31 years old, calling plays for the first time in the NFL and creates an offense that was the first in the 60-year history of the Cowboys franchise to have a 4,000-yard passer, 1,000-yard rusher, and not one but two 1,000-yard receivers. This guy is really good at what he does.
Yeah, it would appear so. And I've been slow to jump on the Kellen Moore bandwagon, but he could be headed to Boise, land of the blue field. Now everybody wants a color, you know, a different color field. They got one in Myrtle Beach where the Chanticleers have one. Everybody loves that, and they're copying them. Ed, last note I wanted to bounce off of you. I guess NBC will certainly have a game next Sunday night. I don't know who they have on the schedule right in front of me, but somebody brought it up on Twitter that it would be kind of funny if they tried to flex the Cowboys after flexing out of the Cowboys game, maybe for the first time ever. Could they try to flex into a Cowboys matchup with the Giants? Problem, of course, would be you just don't, you know, that Reds, the Washington football team is supposed to play a noon game next week.
Well, the NFL is going to match just like they did this week. They'll have Washington and Philadelphia play at the same time the Dallas plays the Giants, so that everybody theoretically has as much incentive as possible to go into the game and play hard the final week of the season. And so I think the Rams and the Cardinals are playing a game too. Now that Seattle's won the division, I think if the Cardinals beat the Rams, they're in. And if they lose to the Rams are in and they're out. So that could be one possible scenario. Probably okay. Waiting to see what the final outcome is of this Tennessee Green Bay game before they get a real sense of what their options okay. are next week.
All right. And the one point that we disagree on, I sort of think the Eagles with the opportunity to keep the Washington football team out will rally to the cause a little bit, even though that would be helping the hated Cowboys. And of course they could be helping the Giants. I mean, this sets up a fun final weekend. It's kind of wrecked my some of the stuff I've been working on, and I don't know what it's done to you. Where have you gotten your assignment yet? Will you?
No, usually I have it by now, but because of the uncertainty of which games are the most important, I'm yet to hear which game I'll cover next week.
All right, I'm hoping you'll be with those Cowboys in the Meadowlands as they go out there and try to get this thing done at the end of the season.
And it's Jason Garrett and his group.
There you go. Yeah, that'd be fun. Love it when you get to New York, Ed, during the holidays. You get over there to the Rockefeller Center, see the tree, all
of
that
stuff. Will the
holidays
be over by then?
I mean, Ed, I think they leave the tree up.
I don't say Merry Christmas after Christmas is over. You know, I don't say Happy 4th of July on the 6th of July. I'm just not one of those people. Like, when the holiday's there, before I'll say it, but once it's over, it's over.
I hope you said Merry Christmas to some people today. And I really do. I really do. I hope you didn't.
I said happy 2021.
Snub anybody. Yeah, we'll be happy to get to be in 2021. Ed, thank you for your work this evening. Been a long, long day for you. Always love it when you end it with the Doomsday Podcast. Ed, I know you'll want to thank Chris Gross, our crack producer, did such a great job at 103.3 for years, and then that station tanked, and Chris and I are just out scrambling around the countryside looking for gigs, but we love having Chris with us, and shout out to Mark Friedman, who, continues to advance. Anything, have you seen, Ed, you're better at reading. I don't get on Facebook much. What's anything we need to update anybody? You want to say something to Frito?
Well, Frito's made it home from the hospital and from the rehab facility. Achieved his goal of being home for Christmas and living a relatively independent life. And that's great for him. And hopefully things will just continue to progress from here.
Yep. And where he was, that is remarkable. And then we wish him all our best and happy holidays to everyone out there. Happy New Year. All of those things as we get ready for another week where the Doomsday Podcast, never meaningless podcast, but we were certainly headed that way a few weeks ago. But now good things are happening. For Ed Warder, Chris Gross, I am Matt Mosley. Thank you for listening to the Doomsday Podcast. We will see you next Sunday evening.
You haven't heard about the McCrispy yet? Well, then, you probably haven't heard the sweet silence after the first crispy bite either. Go try it for yourself to hear the best not sound you've ever heard.
Hey, it's Mark Goodman.
And I'm Alan Light.
On today's podcast, Record Store Day founder Carrie Colleton is joining us to discuss the April 20th RSD special releases.
Plus, we'll talk live with our audience, the Sound Up Pod Squad, and find out who still listens to vinyl. And some updates from the Beatles universe.
Oh, good. Sound Up with Mark Goodman and Alan Light, the only music podcast that matters. Get it on Pandora, Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.